This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love, and we're here to help. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. It's Friday. It's a couple days after Valentine's Day. You and I had fantastic Valentine's days individually because we were working. That's really what happened. My wife and I
nothing
have
like
kind
working
of,
on a holiday.
My wife and I have kind of this agreement, and that is we don't do Valentine's Day on Valentine's Day because it's just a whole mess thing. And of course, we both work from home, so we didn't do anything. And actually, I actually mentioned to her on Valentine's Day, "Happy Valentine's Day." She literally went, "Oh yeah, that's right."
See, if she doesn't realize it.
I'm good. I'm okay right now. It's just right. there will be a dinner coming up. So anyway, I hope you guys have had a good week. Hope you had a good Valentine's Day, if that is something that you celebrate on the day. We are celebrating many things. Among them, you may have heard last podcast. Hopefully you did. Hooked on Driving is now a part of the Everyday Driver ecosystem. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But we're also going to be careful that it's not something we talk about all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We want you guys to know that it exists. We want to encourage you to go to events. We got a couple we want to talk about in a second, but it's not going to be like Welcome to the Tracking Podcast.
Agreed.
That is definitely part of what we're doing.
Agreed. We want you to let you know when there's big track day events coming up, but otherwise we encourage you to continue to come back and look at the HOD calendar in all regions. We've actually heard that there are customers of Hooked on Driving that do events on both coasts. Mm-hmm. That actually happens. So somebody will do the West Coast and then come over here to the East Coast and do an event they travel and that does happen. Some track days coming up towards the end of February, Road Atlanta and Atlanta Motorsports Park. That is a 3-day weekend with a kart day in there too.
It's Road Atlanta and then karting and Atlanta Motorsports Park. It's like 3 days of awesomeness being run by our Northeast franchise. So they're fantastic. Actually, it's our Northeast and Southeast franchise combining
because of that
Atlanta area. So that's going to be a really big event. We're excited about that one.
That is February 23rd through the 25th, 2024. And then if you look at the calendar for HOD, go to all regions and you will see upcoming is Willow Springs International Raceway. That is March 2nd and March 3rd. That's Big Willow.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch Ford versus Ferrari before you go, you'll be so amped. But that's the way to do it. Just watch the movie and then you'll be like, ah.
Here's the thing. All of you Southern California listeners, Big Willow, Willow Springs is your local track and it is a historic track, but it has also been a track, how do I put this tactfully, in need of love.
It needs some love.
And it's been repaired. It has new surface.
It has been resurfaced.
So that's actually really cool. So if you've ever been to Willow Springs or thought about going to Willow Springs, Hooked on Driving is doing that 2-day event on the 2nd and the 3rd. We'd love for you to go. And in general, guys, since we are the guys that now own Hooked on Driving and want to make sure it's a great experience for all of you, when you go, let us know how it was. We want to hear the things you like, the things you're wondering about. We're here. You can either reach us at everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or here's the crazy one, theguys@hookedondriving.com. If you'd like to talk about track business, you can reach us there.
There's more news still coming at you, and that is pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. Our annual pilgrimage, we are announcing registration. All of our patrons can begin on February 17th. That's a Saturday.
Day after today. That's tomorrow.
And everyone else on the 18th. It closes on the 8th of March, and that is for our normal pilgrimage trip, unlike the Hooked on Driving event, which is 2 days on each track. Ours is 1 day, a single day on each track with the road tour. Yep. The road tour is beloved by many people who have gone on it.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
So there's a good mix of Autobahn time and then very slow, 20 kilometers an hour back road through, where are we?
Where kind you of, can't believe how tight this road
can't
is.
Can't believe I'm taking a bewinged race car through this neighborhood.
There's one village we go through every year, and I think I'm going to hit my wing mirrors. I'm like, how am I going down a cobblestone street? Isn't this going to damage something?
So you'd think.
And that's if you're in like the Cayman. I'm in the back sometimes driving the van going, I'm definitely hitting. Yeah.
So this is the official announcement. Patrons on February 17th, everyone else on the 18th. And we would love to have you come. If you've been thinking about it, this is hosted by Todd and I, and it's all inclusive. So when you land in Frankfurt,
everything's covered.
The hotels, transportation, and we want to have you meet everybody that we've met.
It's really fun.
And then last piece of news coming Sunday, February 18th, 2024 is the Maserati MC20 review. Maserati.
Yes. You'll notice that it didn't happen this week, midweek, and we also realized just based on schedule of cars we've had available in the driveway, we didn't get a test drive in time to have one happen this Sunday. So we just went, you know what? We'll have this MC20 piece come out. The Hooked on Driving thing distracted us a little bit this week. So we'll have the MC20 Maserati review.
Distracting for the last 10 months.
Yeah, exactly. That's coming out on Sunday. We look forward to that because that is, I'm telling you right now, that is a quirky review. It's not just a straight up, we drove the Maserati MC20. It is quirky, and I encourage you, Paul and I had a blast. We shot that in January in t-shirts in Los Angeles while my son was clearing 7 inches of snow off the driveway. It was like this triumphant day in Southern California, and we hope you'll watch it.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We're celebrating the new year with new products from Griot's Garage. Wintertime means you might be stuck inside, but you can still clean your car with Ceramic Rinseless Wash. It lifts dirt, grime, and contaminants, and it leaves behind a ceramic shield that enhances water beading and self-cleaning ability.
But if you are getting out the hose, Griot's now offers car wash pods. Just like the pods you use for the clothes washer, you drop one of these in your wash bucket for the perfect amount of soap. These car wash pods even work with your foaming sprayers too.
Or if your winter project has faded trim, or you need to protect the trim on your car, try Satin Finish Ceramic Trim Restorer that renews those old trim pieces and is good for tires too. Plus, there's plastic all-in-one to remove fine scratches and swirl marks and restores dull plastic surfaces.
Remember, all Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made right here in the USA. When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code DRIVER10 for 10% off everything else on your order. That's GRIOTS. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com.
Our first car debate comes from Jeff Z in Chicago, who's trying to not become a Mustang fail video.
What I like about this, there's many things about this that are fun, but he says in the middle of this email, he said that apparently at some point I made a comment that once you start buying Mustangs, you keep buying Mustangs. And he said, that's pretty much been my life experience.
Jeff, thank you for writing. Thank you for listening. He's 42. He's got a wife and two kids with a 2.5 car garage.
Okay.
He's listened to the show since 2018 and loves it. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The car disease struck Jeff shortly after graduating college in 2003 when a friend of his had a 97 Mustang Cobra and made him a V8 fan for life.
Okay, all right. He quickly traded his Mazda 6 for the first Mustang GT he could get his hands on, and it's been downhill from there. He's owned multiple Mustangs. He sent us a list of all the cars he's owned, and guess what? There's a lot of Mustangs on it. But then they had kids. And so he said, okay, some of the fun cars had to go away to make room for sensible cars and a large rear-facing child seat swallowing monster. So about 6 years ago, he traded a boring Hyundai Sonata for a 2011 Infiniti G37 XS. That is his car, and he loves it. But what's doing the family hauling duty? Well, that's a 2017 Acura MDX that is not going anywhere. But if you followed along so far, he also currently has a Mustang.
He got a lightning blue 2017 Mustang GT 6-speed manual with the performance package and the car seats, even though he was told, he had the approval, he was told to get what makes you happy. Or a serious disappointment, he didn't get an auto because his wife can't drive stick and doesn't want to learn.
I feel like we've gotten a lot of emails about this of late, that my significant other can't drive manual, which is fine, doesn't want to learn.
Why?
Now,
I mean,
now,
if you're not
now,
interested, you're just
I understand,
not interested
but,
in there.
But I'm going to throw out this thing to you, Jeff, and to your wife, and to many of you also listening. I actually do wonder if this is that thing where, honey, you love this car, and in order for me to learn on it, I might have to hurt it. So I'm going to come back to what I've said before. I would love everybody to know how to learn to drive manual transmission. But if you, Jeff, would like your wife to learn, and if you, Jeff's wife, would secretly like to learn, which I kind of think you might be intrigued, Jeff can't teach you.
Good point.
So, Jeff,
Good
you
point.
Need to find somebody you trust to teach your wife to drive the Mustang, which is manual transmission. And you need to not be involved, because then it takes away that layer of anybody learning to drive manual transmission. I just killed the car. And the first time you stall a car manual transmission, you're convinced you broke something. By the way, you didn't. but you're convinced you did.
True.
But if you do that with your significant other that loves the car sitting right seat, there's instant tension. But if you do it with a buddy, a friend you know that doesn't own the car, that tension doesn't exist. And then it's just the embarrassment, because there's embarrassment, of I stalled the car. What did I do? Is it okay? Yes, just start it again.
Well, how about his friend that convinced you to get into Mustang Cobra?
I agree. Where is he? Let's have him teach. You have to find an independent third party. It can't be you, Jeff. And I do wonder.
You've got to outsource.
Totally.
You're learning.
For many of you that have told us that your spouse doesn't learn to drive manual, I want to say to you, would they be interested if you didn't teach them? I'm just putting that out there to everybody listening.
Jeff's done some light mods. He hasn't tuned it out of class. He's in the CAI, the Tune, the Axle-Backed Exhaust, the Steeda Stop the Hop Ultimate Street Kit, Barton 2-Post Shifter Bracket, and the Steeda Progressive Lowering Springs.
The one you really have to pay attention to, because this story unfolds around it, is the Axle-Backed Exhaust. What you need to hear there is he has a V8 Mustang GT that's louder than it came from the factory. That is key for where we're going next.
Jeff admits the suburbs of Chicago are primarily laid out in a grid.
Mm-hmm.
Going from one stoplight to another, his commute is also about 20 miles through the suburbs, so no highways are necessary, with a top speed limit of 45 miles an hour. If he gives the Mustang its reins, it's...
Snap the reins. There you go.
If he hits the gas and he maxes out second gear, he's already 15 miles an hour over, and since COVID, his work has allowed him to work from home, so he's only in the office 2 days a week, sometimes three, but that's rare. He's got a heated garage for the winter, but he keeps his Acura and the Mustang in it, leaving his daily to sit in the driveway and regularly become a sheet of ice in the polar vortex winters that they get.
So the Infiniti is struggling along outside, trying to survive the fact that it's a Chicago winter. Got it. Okay.
And they've got a big driveway. He doesn't have to move the Infiniti when he drives the Mustang in the summer.
Like it.
So that's all good. Now, he loves the sound of the V8, especially with that axle-back exhaust.
Mm-hmm. But that's key here.
That's key. When he sees someone else drive with a loud exhaust, he thinks to himself about them, "Well, that's immature."
I love the irony here. You have an axle-back exhaust on your big V8 and you love it, but when someone else drives by with it, you're like, "That's stupid.
How dare they?" Because of that thinking, Jeff asks if it's time for him to get rid of his car.
Mm.
The car also scares him a bit because he's never pushed it hard around a corner. It's the most powerful rear-wheel drive car he's ever owned, and although he feels like he's a good driver, he doesn't know the limits of this car.
Mm.
He's got a good sense of the rear grip, but the front grip he's wary of, as most corners in the suburbs are tight 90-degree turns. He doesn't want to be this Mustang fail video. So he's contemplating trading them both in for a fun dad car that's a mix of luxury and speed. Luxury and speed.
Okay.
His budget is $50,000 to $55,000. $55,000 is the Paul limiter. That includes whatever he gets on trade-in for the Mustang and Infiniti. He couldn't justify quieting it down.
So, hang on. Jeff, what you're saying here is you would rather sell your Mustang than put a quieter exhaust on it. I find that fascinating.
That's revelatory.
You love how it sounds, but you feel like maybe that's not something you should be driving, and so you'd rather sell it loud than make it quieter. I also have another revolutionary thought for Mustang owners out there that are Mustanging their way into crowds. We've all seen the videos, and Mustangs, Lamborghinis are prone to do this. Like the guys leave the light in the left turn and they floor it and then they drift and then it goes all wrong around the corner. The
trees are like magnets for Lamborghinis.
You know what a common thread is in almost all of those videos? Take your foot out of it.
Yeah.
This is the thing, almost every single time when I see one of these videos, the first it starts to go too far is catchable.
Yeah.
Or if it's not catchable, you could slide, embarrassed, to a stop and still be in the middle of the road.
True.
But invariably, in all of these videos, the common thread is somebody behind the wheel thought, "I got this.
I'll just keep my foot in it."
Didn't take their foot in it.
Yeah.
Didn't take their foot out of it and then turn the other way. And guess what? The tank slapping gets worse. Take your foot out of it. Anyway.
Jeff says it's like seeing your kid do something stupid and you think to yourself, "Well, I'm glad my kid doesn't act that way." Right up until your kid acts that way, and you think, well, that's not as bad, right? It's all good. The cars Jeff has considered so far include an Audi S4, S5, or RS5 Sportback,
okay,
BMW M340i, Infiniti Q50 Red Sport. He does admit the interior is in dire need of an update.
Mm-hmm.
It needed an update when it came out onto the market.
I hate to say that, but that is a platform they've been milking. Yeah.
Gosh. Mercedes AMG C43, an older Audi S7 or RS7. The maintenance scares him on that car. It should, but still, you know, it's
they're
awesome.
Still good. Yeah.
Sweet car. And the Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio. He will go with rear-wheel drive or all-wheel drive. He says it's hard stop on anything front-wheel drive.
Okay.
And an automatic is a must, so his wife can drive this car too. But back to Todd's conversation and his recommendation. Is it a must? Is that the truly the solve? And have you asked her, Jeff? Is getting the automatic truly the solve? And she says, yes, okay, don't want to do
which
it.
Which is fine, okay.
Fine, but if there's even a thin slice of hope that she says, well, I may be intrigued. Not only does that open up a new skill and a new driving world for her, it helps your options change too.
That's true. That's true.
He asks if it's time to just trade in both cars, or does he need to find more ways to enjoy driving the Mustang? He used to take his other Mustangs to the quarter mile track once or twice a year, but now his life with kids has gotten in the way of that, and he fears the mod bug would hit him hard because it'll be a never-ending pursuit of that little bit lower time slip.
That is absolutely a slippery slope. There's
you
no
think,
question.
Oh, I know the part that'll solve this.
Oh, I just know what I need to do. I talked to that other guy in the paddock, and he has whatever. Yeah.
Blank part. So he's curious to hear what we think. Any advice that we can give on going to a dealer to just do some drive homework? He dreads the dealer because it seems like you're always there longer than you really need to be. It's the time suck 5,000.
It is. It's amazing. Jeff, let's talk about the dealer real quick. I had this conversation, I think, on the podcast, but I know I've talked about it on email with various ones of you that have written in over the years. Nobody seems to like the dealer experience. We've never come across anybody who's like, I want to go to the car dealer and do a transaction. When you and I went and got the GR86 together.
Feeling bored?
Which,
go to a dealer.
That was all right. Look, it was the car we wanted directly shipped to us from Toyota. It was a dealer that was already prepped for the fact that we were going to be there and we were going to film the transaction. Mm-hmm. This was as smoothed out as it could possibly be, and it still took twice as long as you and I expected.
Yes.
It's just a time suck.
That was expedited.
Exactly. It's just a time suck. My point is, please don't ever discount or not consider the car you really want because the dealer experience you expect to be bad or was bad. That is one day in your life of ownership of the car. It's like having a bad first date with the person you're meant to spend your life with.
That's okay? A great way of putting it.
The whole rest of your life is ahead of you. Yes, that was a terrible date, but look at all the stuff we can do now. I feel like there have been many of us, and I'm pointing the finger at myself, where I'm just not even going to pursue that car because the dealer experience is so bad. But what if you love that car? So think about that. I also want to say this to you. The other way to avoid the dealer, what's the word here, black hole in this conversation is to do all of your test driving outside the dealer. Turo, friends, people that are selling the car that are private individuals, find other ways
to test drive the car.
Just walk up to somebody.
You don't know me.
But that car I want to drive. Who knows where
it is? Sweet car, dude.
Totally. Try to find people that have got the cars you want that can get there's some way you can drive it that is independent of the dealer pressure or the dealer's standard test drive loop. Because then you're going to be able to properly, unbiasedly judge, do I like driving this car? And then if you know that's the car I want, then if you have a terrible dealer experience, let's hope you don't, but if you do, you know already that that's the car I want, and then you're just walking through the steps to get to the other side.
You know, my choices really depend on what you want to do with this car.
Mm.
Because you said one car to do everything, but you're also going to the drag strip, or you have in the past with the Mustang, which you don't do with the Infiniti. I mean, you could.
True, yeah.
The times on your time slip would be higher.
That took longer.
If you're okay
that's
with that.
Interesting.
Yeah. We're still having fun and going fast. It's just not as fast, and it takes longer. You can only tell us what you, or tell yourself what you are going to do with this car. We'd love you to bring it to a Hooked on Driving event.
Well, you said you've never actually done good corners in the Mustang. Can you do that before you sell it? Go to an event.
Yes. What a perfect way to get your car on track, and you can get in the A group and have a dedicated instructor showing you how to manage your tires. That's really all track driving is. It's just tire patch management.
You're right. You're right.
That's it. Tirepatchmanagement.com or something.
.org. It is a public service.
It's a .org. You're right. And also, Todd has such a great point here about opening up your world, because I think a Civic Type R would be a sweet dad car, personally.
Yes, it would be. Yes, for sure.
But it doesn't meet your requirement because it's front wheel drive only.
And it's manual.
And it's a manual.
Yeah, you're right. Two strikes. Yep.
But that blue is so cool. We had one for our comparison with the Type S.
And the S3, yeah.
And the Audi S3. I like all of your choices. I mean, you can't go wrong. Mm-hmm. Any of your choices are great, but if there's something in your mind, you think, you know what, drag strip driving is in my past, or you know what, I want to do more of that. Mm-hmm. That will inform our car choices for mm-hmm. you. But I would love it, since you haven't been on track, it doesn't sound like you mm-hmm. haven't done some high speed cornering and really gotten to feel what that car can do and understanding car control like that.
Yeah.
I would push you in that direction mm-hmm. personally, because that is a new world of skills. I think you would really love it. And for that reason, I would suggest a BMW M2 competition. You could choose DCT
or
manual.
Yeah.
Really comes down to a conversation with your wife.
I think that's actually, depending upon your version, I guess the new one is the auto, actually. The prior one was the DCT, right?
And that's what I'm talking about, to meet your budget. The prior one was DCT.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I suppose you could consider new, but they're $75,000, and they're awesome, because you have to get those seats. And I think the carbon
terrifying.
Pack. I guess the carbon pack comes with the seats.
$15,000 worth of essentially cool seats. And they're very cool seats.
They're very cool.
But $15,000 worth of cool seats.
Yeah. I think you'd love... A new M2. I didn't even think of that. I was thinking the old generation.
The old one's good. Generation. Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
It's smaller. It's lighter. Mm-hmm. It's designed for what you want to do, because you can putter around. You can commute. But having that car as your only car would make you want to do more with it. And that's my concern. If we just say sell both and you get an Audi something.
Sure.
Great. But that's all you'll ever do with it. And if that is, and you're not going to do drag strip quarter mile times mm-hmm. and you're not going to do track driving, get an Audi. Get the M340, get the Q50 Red Sport, and that is your only car.
Okay.
Because you admit you've got a family and action. Absolutely. Life happens. Mm-hmm. We definitely get that. But I'm wondering if you had something kind of hot, if you had that Civic Type R, because that's like the sweet spot. I think the Civic Type R is a sweet spot, and it's designed for track use.
And it's an incredible dad car.
Such an incredible dad car. And it would make you, every time you're commuting in it, you'd be like, oh, I got to use this car for its potential. It's giving me the itch. I have to get this on track.
But it is a front wheel drive manual. Yeah.
It doesn't meet your needs. It's just so good.
It is very good.
I spoke about in all of our reviews with that car, you cannot tell me that front wheel drive means you're not an enthusiast anymore if you own this car.
Sure. Yeah.
It's such a good car. Mm. It drives so well. But then I come back to that M2 competition. But you also admit you've got some serious winters. But if you went down to one car, that means the M2 would be garaged.
True, yes.
It wouldn't be covered mm-hmm. in that sheet of ice.
It wouldn't,
out
yes.
there.
Get some good winter tires and you're set.
Correct. It would be driven all winter, but mm-hmm. it wouldn't be ignored in the summer either. Mm-hmm. Whether you're doing a road trip, whether you're simply commuting it, or whether you are investigating track time, and we know where you can go do that.
That's true. Jeff, there's some great stuff here. What's funny is that as I was reading your email, I was halfway down your email. I hadn't gotten to the things you'd already looked at yet. I was halfway through your email and I said, I know Jeff's car. It's the Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio. I mean, that should be what it is.
It's fantastic.
And then it's on your list. I think you would love that car. You go from V8 to V6, but it's a V6, I think, with one of the best voices of any V6 being sold right now. It sounds phenomenal in that car. Mm-hmm. It can be loud and obnoxious, and it can also be kind of quiet. How much do you have your foot in it? It is a really good four-door with great styling, a solid interior, very good driver's seats. Probably will fit rear facing is going to be a bit tight, but it's going to fit all of your kid stuff going on in there.
And it doesn't need to be modded.
It doesn't. And it doesn't, it's not common either. I mean, look, you've mentioned the BMW M340i. Very good car. Drives well, fast, good amount of space. I don't really have any critiques on the BMW, except the Alfa's more interesting and engaging to drive.
Mm-hmm.
The BMW on its own, good, solid. Don't have a problem with it. I just know I like the Alfa better. Every time I drive that Quadrifoglio, I'm like, this is just a great car. Speaking of that, actually, we've seen the bad news, according to Road and Track and others, that car is going to stop being sold in the U.S., which is a real tragedy.
It's a bummer.
They're pulling it back because Alfa is saying that their next Quadrifoglios are going to probably be hybridized. They're talking about them being electrified in some way.
Which means they're going to have to switch platforms to be able to do it.
So hybridized something, but that Quadrifoglio is a real watershed, real high point for me on four-door sedan. So I really want you to look at that seriously. But you have forgotten the other one I always bring up, and you're a man that likes V8s.
That's true.
That's the Chevy SS. Come on, man.
That you could be rocking a Chevy SS.
You could rock a Chevy SS. The thing about it is, the Chevy SS that are too expensive are the manuals. You can get yourself an auto with MagnaRide and be under budget.
That's a good point.
Those are the ones that actually you can get a halfway decent deal on. It's the manuals that people are overcharging for. So my guess is you can get one for $40,000-$45,000. You're well inside your budget. That is a, and here's the thing about the SS. All the V8 that you love, you still have that. I mean, you went Chevy over Ford. I understand sacrilege, but you still have the big V8 that you love. It can also be a totally subtle undercover dad car. But we have not only back road pushed a Chevy SS, I've tracked it. It's phenomenal. You could take it to an actual racetrack track day, your big four-door sedan, and have a great time. By the way, the Quadrifoglio would be the same as well. So the SS, you haven't mentioned, but that gets you V8 dad car that'll do everything you need.
I'm mulling the Cadillac website right now.
Uh-oh.
The CT4V Blackwing or the CT4V? The V is the automatic. The Blackwing is the manual.
Yeah.
I mean, could you go used, slightly used?
Yeah, okay.
And then, I mean, it's not a V8, but it's really good.
But it's a lot, yeah.
It's a lot. Maybe you could convince your wife to get the Blackwing.
Telling you.
Because then you're buying electric cars.
Learn to drive manual. Could be fun. Could be a fun little outing.
Interesting. Yep. All right, well, Jeff, thank you for writing. Much appreciated. Write to us whatever you decide. Mm-hmm. Got a car conclusion. We're very curious. And if you've got one like Jeff's, an email like Jeff's, or simply a debate, write to us everydaydrivertv@gmail.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Olivia is writing in from close to us here, actually just down in Heber City, Utah. So that's about 20 minutes from where we're sitting as we record. She's writing in on behalf of her and her fiance, and they are selling cars, moving cars, but the truth is they both would like his and hers sports cars.
They currently have a 392 Wrangler, an 06 manual NC Miata, and a 95 F350. The Miata's not going anywhere.
Okay.
But that means we've got a 392 Wrangler for sale because they just started living full-time in their camper. So that means...
The 350 is going to stay.
The 350 should stay,
yeah,
guess,
because
right?
They're going to pull the camper around. But this is hashtag van life, yo. They're living in their camper. But what I like about this is not a camper in the middle of nowhere. It's a camper close enough to the fact they have an NC Miata and they're looking for more sports cars. So we're not off in the brush anywhere. We have sports cars to drive. I love this.
Olivia's had an 03 Lincoln Navigator, which was a gift from Grandma, an 04 Mercedes E350 wagon, and a 2018 E350 Cabriolet. Unfortunately, that was totaled. $20,000 to $25,000 is where they want to stay for each of them. Her fiancé is Tommy. They've always dreamed about being Porsche owners.
Mm, okay.
That's a great sentence to start a paragraph with. And that is noted here.
We're going to circle back.
We've got a budget.
Uh-huh.
We've always wanted to be Porsche owners.
Or whatever owners, yeah.
So they've got their eyes, and have been for a long time, eyes on a used Boxster for Olivia. Tommy's having a hard time with the thought of owning a Porsche that isn't a manual. Olivia hasn't learned to drive a manual yet. She knows she's sorry.
Again, get someone other than Tommy to teach
That's
you.
True.
That's all I'm saying.
For Tommy, they're torn. Option one is getting Olivia into something now, letting Tommy enjoy the Miata for a while, and then in a few years going to put their money where their mouth is and buy him a new manual.
Okay.
Which would have a Porsche badge on it, right?
Theoretically, yeah. But they do say if he gets something new, they've thought about maybe as much as $65K could get them a GR Supra, a GR 86 with money left over, or
yes,
get into a brand new hardtop RF Miata because they think it's a timeless design, and I do agree with you. The option two is to get them both something right now. But here's what's crazy. If we go both getting something right now, remember that the max is going to be $25,000 for each car. But in that scenario, they still plan to keep the 06 Miata because Tommy loves it so much, loves that it's convertible, and likes that it has an old school hydraulic steering feel.
Now, Olivia has always been a Mercedes kind of a girl, and convertibles are what she goes for. Although she does love the bubbly look of Porsches. By the way, Olivia, I've never heard them described that way before. Bubbly?
But I also read it and was like, yep, I see it.
I guess
there it
bubbly.
Is. Yep.
The community, she likes the community comes with it, and she'll never complain about a flat six. Anything that will give her a fun, zippy ride is good with her. Tommy loves his Miata. He's fallen in love with convertibles. He totally values a light, chuckable sports car over straight-up power. But he can't help but wondering if he's going to keep the Miata. Should he go for something that's going to give him a different experience?
I love it. It's great.
Wow. Thanks for writing. That GR86 is... I'm trying to figure out how to have you own one.
Mm.
But I like the RF Miata idea a lot. But if I recommend the RF Miata for you, I would say sell the 06, and you don't want to sell the 06.
Agreed.
So do I recommend GR86 in addition to the 06 Miata for Tommy? Mm-hmm. It saves money because then we can investigate some sort of Mercedes convertible. I mean, Olivia's a Mercedes convertible kind of a girl, so we need to get her into Mercedes product.
Well, that's the thing. You ended up the same place I did, and that is Olivia needs a SLK, some sort of used SLK.
I had originally thought about the SLK 55.
The AMG one. Those are beasts.
Because it only came with an automatic.
Mm-hmm.
You could, it's shoehorned a V8 into this little thing. I think you'd really like one.
I think they'd both really like that.
And use, they're right in that, the really nice ones are more than 25K, but could we spend less on Tommy's car because he's still got the Miata and spend a little bit more on the SLK?
Well, this is the debate, is that if they don't get two cars right now, then we have a little more wiggle room for both of them. We're talking about Olivia now and then Tommy later. So maybe pulling off that AMG 55. I mean, here's the thing. You had the base model and you had good things to say about it, but we both knew that lurking above the budget of when we spent on those cheap sports cars was that 55 AMG that was just more robust and faster, more interesting across the board.
V8 stuffed into this little thing. Like the generation that I had, that 06, somewhere in there. Like I don't like the later ones, the 2014, and they're more expensive anyway. They look like a bigger car, but the ones that are 06, 08, I'm seeing them now. They're 20, 25,000, somewhere in there. They came with that automatic transmission, which it doesn't force you to drive the stick. It doesn't force you to learn, but Tommy still got his Miata and we encourage you to go learn. And then whatever he gets could be, but then you've got four cars, right?
Well,
if he gets something,
the F-350 is the hauler. Yeah, so that stays. Yeah. Okay.
Four cars.
Well, here's the thing. I want to know where your camper is parked.
Yeah.
Because you have multiple sports cars in play, which is really exciting. I love the SLK here. My big thing for you, Olivia, is this. I want you to drive one of those SLKs. I want you to drive a Boxster, and I want you to drive a BMW Z4.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want you and Tommy to have a real, genuine, serious conversation about what do you like of each of those three and why? Because I think you've already said you're a Mercedes girl. You're intrigued by Porsches. You both are. Mm-hmm. And the Z4 is the wild card. And I think it's the one after my generation that had the retractable hardtop that you never see anymore.
That was a prettier.
That's a very pretty car.
I liked
car.
Yours, the one you had, but that was a little bit more.
The next one beyond that was really, really pretty. So my thinking is drive all three of those and really talk about which one you'd really like to have. And do think of it as your car. And maybe it is the SLK, but maybe that BMW surprises you. Really interesting cars, all three of those. I think that's your drive homework. And then, Tommy, I hate to say this, but I'm going to. Whether you keep this Miata or not, the next car shouldn't be a Miata. You need something new.
That's good. I mean, I'm looking at an 06 SLK 55 AMG for $25,900 in St. Charles, Illinois, with 23,653 miles.
Come
on
now.
It's brand new. That was somebody's baby. They didn't drive it.
They barely drove that.
It's in silver, but just think Mercedes silver arrows and you'll be fine with it. This is brand new
for $25,900.
Come on now. They'll take $25,000 right now. You
absolutely
could go get
they
that.
Would. Yes.
But then if they drive all three, you know Tommy's going to be like, well, whatever one you get, I'll choose between the other two, which leaves Tommy, you, a Boxster and a Z4 to choose from.
Fair point. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because he's a convertible guy, but if we get you another convertible, you already have a convertible.
Mm-hmm.
The Z4 is just like a slightly bigger, more powerful, faster Miata. So what did we solve?
Well, fair, but it's a new life experience. That's what I really like about this.
Okay, so everything from Stuttgart. Boxster for you, Tommy. SLK 55 for you, Olivia. And you keep the F-350. And you could get a car carrier that, leave the camper behind and tow two cars to the track.
Or, maybe if the Miata stays, then it's just, it's your analog car. I can't believe you guys are talking about this. This is amazing. I do want to say, look, I like that you really are considering the GR Supra, Tommy. I think that is an excellent car. That car in manual is genuinely special. It's a really good car in manual. I want you to drive the GR86, at least drive one, because I want you ideally to drive those two cars in proximity of each other, the GR Supra manual and the GR86, and think about which do you prefer and why. Because the Supra is the right upgrade. You coming out of a Miata, this is a more powerful car. It's not the convertible because Olivia has the convertible. This is a hard top coupe. It's focused. It's very good. But the GR86 is the best modern light sports car being made. I mean, I know the Miata exists. The Miata has been around forever. This is the new introduction of that idea with more space. GR86 is very good, but it's a different feel than that Supra. So look at both of those. And then I have a couple other ideas for Tommy.
Oh, okay.
If you keep that Miata and you are able to get something in addition, which is one of the ways this was discussed, like a few years from now, you get something in addition. So Olivia's, let's say she's rocking the SLK AMG. Cool car.
Yes.
At one of 20,000 something
miles. 23,000 miles for 25 grand?
Desperate to be driven. Come on now.
Why haven't you bought it yet?
She has that. He has the Miata that he loves.
Yeah.
We need to get something totally different. Okay? I have two.
Oh, good.
C8 Corvette. You got 50 grand to spend, 60 grand to spend. They're starting to come down.
So you're saying a little bit later. A
couple years from now.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, not right now. Get yourself a C8 Corvette, or at least drive it. What do you think of that car? Mm. You've bought yourself, to some degree, an affordable supercar. Or BMW M2.
Hmm.
Not the current, not the new one, the prior
one. Generation. Okay.
Any version of that is a very good car. And then I have a wild card because you guys, you're talking about owning two small convertibles and an F-350. Let's get something that bridges the gap. Just a little bit.
Somebody would make something.
Little bit of bridging the gap. And I landed on GR Corolla.
Oh, that's interesting.
Hatchback, manual transmission, all wheel drive. Olivia had to learn to drive manual, but that's a great middle ground car that gets you some utility back while still being nothing but fun. And it's in your budget.
We've still solved it. Four cars.
Yes. You still somehow are living van life with four cars. I honestly think you've accomplished something there. Well done.
Back to coffee.
Oh, good. Yay! Sorry, go on.
Kirk Meyer asks, wouldn't it be more of my philosophy to have a separate foam maker than one machine that does that and make cappuccino? What Kirk is doing is tying in the one cappuccino maker to do it all, like we don't recommend for cars.
We're talking about cars for purposes. Shouldn't you have coffee accoutrements for certain purposes?
He says, aren't I compromising the integrity of one thing for one job? Am I saying that a machine can do two things great? Well,
by the way, the phone does quite a few things now. I just want to bring that up. Yeah.
I looked at the Breville machines, Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them have built-in grinders and others don't. If I want the perfect coffee experience, yes, I want the manual group. I want to actually have a separate grinder to grind my own beans, but then I'm tamping and it just is a longer process. It's the better way to do it and it would definitely taste better, but I need speed and I need push button, great espresso. And I feel like I've solved it with the Gaggia, but it just so happens it's got both options.
Okay.
But that means it's got the built-in grinder, and that way I don't have to buy a bunch of separate items. So in this sense, I'm compromising because of my demands.
Okay.
I want speed. I want great espresso. Is the espresso the best ever? No, I'd get a... I should be looking at the Il Marzocco machines, the ones from Italy, and it's like a tiny little box that's 20 grand for the house.
Oh my gosh.
Are those 20? No, those were 3,500, but still.
But either way.
The slightly larger ones were 20 grand. And then I should have the water piped in and a drain put in my countertop. And then I'm off the rails.
As far as I'm concerned, you're already off the rails, but okay.
I understand what you're trying to do because of how we relate it to cars. Mm-hmm. And we say, get the right tool for the job. But then I'd have to have a separate small espresso maker, like the Breville with its own group and a grinder. The process would just take longer. I don't have that kind of time.
I know you well enough to know that once you are standing, you need coffee.
Coffee.
Your perfect world is somehow you just struggled to get vertical and somebody hands you the perfect cup of coffee.
That would be perfect.
That is your perfect world. So you're trying to bridge the gap. I respect that. Okay.
Yes.
EV Wall of Shame says, is it wise to take a car with a manual transmission to your first track day, or would you be better off with an automatic transmission? Okay, EV, the big thing I'm going to say here is, how comfortable are you in the manual transmission car being discussed? Because I will tell you my absolute line in the sand here. Do not try to get better at or learn to drive a manual on track. Full stop. If you are not comfortable driving that manual transmission car, like subconsciously comfortable, do not take it on track. That is not the place to get better, okay? But if you are comfortable with your manual transmission car, my suspicion is it's probably better suited, I'm guessing, than whatever car you have automatic you could also take to the track. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing your manual is probably more track worthy. So if you're comfortable, absolutely take it. It's not going to complicate your world if you're already comfortable with the car. And it's actually very fun. I love my manual transmission Lotus Elise on track. I really like the GR86 on track. It never bothered me. Now, the flip side is when we go to the Ring and Spa, we really encourage people to drive an auto, even if they normally drive a manual, because the Ring specifically has so much going on that we just want to take one thing off the board. But a normal racetrack, why not?
On Facebook, Joe Sadowski says, what are our thoughts on car mods? It seems like we're mostly in the mind that OEM or OEM Plus is the way to go. Joe, we've definitely discussed this quite a bit.
OEM Plus. That's OEM my plus. New term. That's yeah. really good.
Where do we draw the line of upgrading the car versus getting a different car? We always recommend, first of all, you think about your usage. Mm-hmm. What are you going to be doing? Why do you want to upgrade it? For what reason? Mm-hmm. Once you've figured that out, driver mod is the first thing.
Yeah.
Second thing is kind of a toss-up between brakes and tires, but usually it's tires. Mm-hmm. Brakes are definitely more important, but no power. Everybody thinks, oh, I should upgrade my car. That just means a bunch more power.
Yeah.
No.
That's certainly not the top of our list. Yeah.
But once you decide that, you have to come to the conclusion that, all right, if I put $6,000 into my car, I could just sell it and get a slightly used Boxster or a Cayman or a GT86 or a Miata or something even more expensive, because I've put that into the car, and actually the shorter wheelbase and the stance of the car and the suspension it has is actually better. So I might as well not spend money on the mods and get the better car. You're going to have to look closely at your budget, but don't allow scope creep. Don't allow it to be like, well, I spent $300 there and $1,000 there, and I spent another $300. Mm-hmm. At the end of the year, you add it up and you spent $13,000 on additional stuff on your car in addition to your car payment and insurance, when you could have just sold your car and gotten something better that you really love.
I love that. Joe, I'm going to add to this by saying, here's the parameter that I typically say, and that is, once you start trying to mod a car, whatever car it is, to do the opposite of what it was designed for, it's time to sell it. And I'll give you extreme examples.
Slicks on a minivan.
Seriously, I'll give you extreme examples. You have a Miata, but you got into quarter mile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could you mod your Miata to make it the fastest Miata on the planet? You could, but why?
Exactly.
Go buy something that's good to do the drag strip.
Exactly.
Conversely, you have a Challenger Hellcat, and you've gotten into tight road courses. Can you do it? Yes. But what you're going to think is, I should try to make this Hellcat lighter. No, you shouldn't. Sell the Hellcat and get something lighter that turns better. This is what happens with modding, is typically people, then they decide they want to mod the car to be something it isn't, and that is the absolute black hole. Please don't do that.
Geese1RBM is asking for the Wrangler voice. He's listening to some older podcast.
Comfortable jeans.
There it is. Haven't heard that in a long time.
T. Garrett on Instagram says he's listened to our comments about the influence that we and other journalists supposedly had on making the volume slider in the Honda Civic Type R go away and be replaced by an actual volume knob. He said, would we please up our efforts to stop piano black? And I will say,
I feel like we've tried
we
hard.
We have, and many others have as well. And there's two things that I keep bringing up, even though I don't know that they're going to go away. Beaver teeth and piano black, because I feel like we should never be assimilated. We should never be just the frogs in the boiling water where we've just decided we're okay with it.
Lobster in the pot.
The only way it's going to stop is if people keep complaining. And maybe I have to be that guy. But piano black is something we regularly call out, because by and large, it does not make a car, it makes a car look great when it's brand new and got photographed.
And
every other time in the rest of its 200,000-mile existence, it will only look worse. I don't like piano black. It doesn't make it higher end, and I will keep complaining, and hopefully in some cars they will start listening. Jeremy Hartson's asking a thoughtful question here. He's noting that the new Nismo Nissan Z is priced a few thousand dollars right underneath the Cayman T, and he's saying, okay, considering that Nissan is taking all of their platforms and extending them, as they did with the Frontier, as they did here with the Nissan Z, and now the Nismo Z, and the Cayman is known to be like refined pinnacle motorsports car, how on earth can these two sit this close together in the pantheon of cars? You're right. The Z is in a real problem space. We really liked the Nismo. In fact, the Nismo was the Z car I was hoping for, but it's touching $70,000, which is hard. So now you end up selling that car. Here's the chicken or egg problem. You end up selling that car only to people that are big Z fans. Because if you're just looking, I have $70,000 to buy a sports car. Are you going to buy the Nismo? And I really like it, but are you going to buy the Nismo over anything else around it. A Cayman maybe slightly used, a GR Corolla and save some money. What about a used, a little bit beat on C8 Corvette? What about a C7 Corvette? There's a lot of stuff. With $70,000 in your pocket, you could get a great M2. It's in a really tough spot. And I think what's going to happen here is the Z the world wants, which is the Nismo, the base one, no, it's the Nismo, isn't going to sell well because it's too expensive for what you get compared to everything else in the market. And it's designed for people that are probably already Z fans. So then that's going to perpetuate people to think in corporate, yeah, see, the Z's just not successful. It just frustrates me, but that's where we're at.
Why didn't Nissan call?
Well, we don't get many phone calls of those kinds, but we sure complain about it. Yeah, exactly.
Jeremy was also asking about, regarding news about Hooked on Driving. He's asking about create a new fashion line of tees popping up at Blipshift. We're thinking about things, certainly, and there will be, there's going to be merch coming for Hooked on Driving, and we're very excited about that reality. But for the most part, Todd and I are wrapping our arms around the company and understanding everything about how operations are going and focused on efficiencies and really making this company run and putting the word out to you guys and really encouraging you to come to a track day because it is such a premier name and that's what we're thrilled to be in our portfolio.
Oh, the things to learn, the things we are learning daily. We keep looking at each other and going, okay, well, that was new,
exactly.
Which is really cool. Dammit, Patton's writing in and saying he has an unexpected trip to take out of town to get his wife's phone repaired because the nearest Apple store is 2 hours away. And he realizes there's a huge like hot rod custom car show going on in that city right when he's going to be there. Is it worth killing time and just paying the cost of entry to go in? Is it good to experience different car culture? And I'm going to say, damn it, Patton, absolutely.
Yes, agree.
And I'm going to say something that's going to sound grandiose. I don't mean it to. The problem you're asking, damn it, Patton, isn't that the problem with the world at large right now? We don't experience things that are not already things we like. We don't talk to people that aren't like us. We don't experience thoughts that are not like the thoughts we already believe. We don't expose ourselves to anybody else. We don't talk to anybody else that's not already in our group that is like-minded. If we all just kind of branched out, and I'm saying this to all of us, myself included, if we just branched out to that little bit of uncomfortable place where it's like, oh, I didn't know anything about that and I'm learning about it now, I think we'd all get along a little better. So you know you're not a hot rod guy. Okay, go to the hot rod show and look at some of those crazy beasts.
And you don't know what's going to show up.
Agreed.
Hot rod can mean anything. And you could be like, oh, it's so worth it because I saw this cool thing. And your mind could be blown. Although I will say, I have tried sea urchin and I hate sea urchin.
Okay.
I will not eat sea urchin.
Well, you know,
I like sushi.
But you tried it.
I tried it
this
once.
This is the key thing.
It was disgusting.
Okay, fine.
I do not like sea urchin. Do not try to feed me sea urchin.
My son recently tried an oyster, and it was amazing. I applauded him for the effort. The look on his face made me realize that's not happening again anytime soon.
People seriously eat this?
So that was done. That happened. Dad, thanks.
Thank you for all your questions. We very much appreciate it. EverydayDriverTV@gmail.com is where to write to us for your Topic Tuesdays, your car debates, and your car conclusions. We're always looking forward to your social media questions. Much appreciated.
It dawns on me as we talk about this, there have been a bunch of questions about today's postings of photos. Yes, we actually did take our sports cars skiing. I didn't think this was possible. It made my ski day better.
It did.
Which was fascinating.
Because you knew what you were coming back to.
I knew I was doing it at all.
Yeah.
Climbing into my tiny little Lotus wearing all of the Michelin Man stuff that's required for skiing was really very fun. There is a video coming. We were just excited to do it.
Guys, thanks again. We really appreciate it. We're looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.